Before we begin today's program, I'd like to announce that Michael Sarion and I will be doing a 6-part program series together here on Red Ice Radio, starting July 6th at 1 p.m. Pacific on bbsradio.com. During this 6-part series, we'll also be having a contest, and you'll have the opportunity to win one DVD per program from Michael Sarion's acclaimed DVD series, Origins and Oracles. The first person to call us live during the show with the correct answer will win, so make sure you stay tuned to Red Ice Radio and red-ice.net for more information about this series and the contest. And don't forget, our first live program is July 6th at 1 p.m. Pacific on bbsradio.com. To find out more about Michael Sarion and his work, check out his website, taroscopes.com. Truth against the world. Hi, my friends, and welcome back to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in to bbsradio.com, or if you are listening through the archives sometime in the future. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I'm coming to you from the west coast of Sweden, and I will be your host for the following hour. I'm very excited about today's program because one of my favorite scholars and researchers is back on the program. I'm talking about Michael Sarion. He was first on the show about 2 months ago, and I'm very glad that he's back with us. That first show we did, by the way, is available through the archives, so just head on over to red-ice.net or redicecreations.com to find out more. And make sure to check that out if you're not familiar with Michael and his research, because I'm going to be somewhat rude today and skip all the long introductions and presentations, simply because I want to spend as much time as possible with Michael. But quickly, I want to mention that Michael has been very kind to send me a copy of his Origins and Oracles series, and I just want to say how much I enjoy the series and how much I've learned so far by watching it. It's a fantastic series. It's a beautiful production and wonderfully presented, and most importantly, it's jam-packed with wonderful research material. And Michael is doing something few out there have done. He shatters the concept of a clouded past and presents in a coherent way an idea of what actually has happened on this planet, all the way from the ancient world to up to the present day, basically. And he has given himself plenty of time to explore the many topics of in this series, and he leaves no stone unturned, so to speak. It's a library of information and what I guess is called alternative history. And Michael is a unique scholar and extremely knowledgeable about his subjects, and I'm very glad to have him here. So, hi, Michael, and welcome back to the program, my friend.
Oh, Henrik, thank you very much. It's lovely to be on, and I'm glad that you received the box set. If I arrived, I wanted to make sure that you got it.
Yeah.
So that, again, you know what we're doing, and that you can pretty much experience, what I've been basically doing in the last 2 years. We're putting that series together, so I'm glad that it arrived.
Great. And I'm so glad to have you back on the program. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and so thank you for taking the time to be here. And to start things off here, there are, a thousand things we can talk about, but we agreed to talk a little bit in the beginning here about Akhenaten and the cult of Aten today. And, one thing I really like about your website, taroscopes.com, on the page you call Astrotheology is, from what I can tell, at least, is that you update and add sections to that as your research progresses and evolves into new areas. And I guess on page one there now, the title of the page is Akhenaten, the Cult of Aten, and the Dark Side of the Sun. So
right.
Why don't we simply begin at the beginning, to kick things, get things going, so to speak, and we don't leave anyone behind. First of all, who is Akhenaten or Aten?
Yeah, Akhenaten is the pharaoh that is probably the most wife, Nefertiti, is very well known. And there's several reasons why that is. There was obviously 32 dynasties of Egypt, and there was probably three times that many, but actual scholars recognize 32 dynasties dating from way, way back at the time of the third dynasty and the building of the pyramids. But at the 18th dynasty, which is only about 2,000 years B.C., it's about 1600, 1400 B.C., many, many important things were happening in Egypt, and the pharaoh that ruled at that time was Akhenaten. The reason why he is so well known is because Western scholars tend to put a lot of emphasis on that pharaoh, and they tend to downplay and not want us to know a lot about the other pharaohs. So you have to go digging for that. Hmm. Whereas Akhenaten and his son Tutankhamun, there's a lot of... It's by design. It's almost by design that there's a lot of attention focused on that period, and a lot of disinformation and lies are being told about Akhenaten and what kind of a person he was. And he's very much a lionized figure. He's almost like a Hollywood media character in Egyptology. You know, he's the hero. He's the champion. And, of course, the reason why that really is, why they would want to do that, is because he is put before us as the creator of monotheism. And yeah, people use that term without really thinking what the term even means. You know, obviously monotheism, one God or one religion.
Yeah.
But we have got to go further than that and really discover what on earth does it even mean to have one religion. What are we talking about here? Now, the Egyptologists tried to explain that by saying, well, it means that everybody else other than Akhenaten was a idol-worshipping, you know, pantheist.
Yeah.
Who are just these, you know, hideous pagans who worshipped a whole, you know, hundreds of different weird, you know, animal-headed gods. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's why Akhenaten stands out, because he was this incredible monotheist who just worshipped one god, the one sun. You know, and this, again, yeah, is also lies, total nonsense, because monotheism is not distinguished that way. Akhenaten was not the discoverer of anything to do with a one god or a one solar god concept, Aton, because Amun-Ra had been worshipped in Egypt for endless millennia. And Atum-Ra was always described as, or sorry, Amun-Ra was always, you know, described as the one god. So even the idea of a monotheistic cult, even the idea of a one god, far precedes Akhenaten. He just did or skewed it a little bit. So anyway, he's a very famous character. And what I've done in my work is that I've, just for people who are maybe completely new to this, why they might be interested in what we're talking about, is because for many years now, and it's in American context, it's probably from about 30 to 50 years, one might look to the works of Eustace Mullins in this country, the first American scholars who started to question what was going on with the secret society symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
Shows like yourself, and with the work of David Icke and myself and others, people tend to think that this is a long, long, you know, thread of research that's been going on, and tremendous and all of this. But as a matter of fact, the occult world, looking at the secret society, what we might call the conspiratorial aspects, is extremely recent. You're talking about within 20 years.
Oh, really?
Sure. If you cast your mind back to what was going on in the 1970s and the 1980s with the New Age movement, you would hardly ever find anyone in that entire world movement.
I see what you mean. Go ahead.
Who dealt with any of this?
Yeah.
So it's very recent. It doesn't mean that there wasn't people who have done it. There has been in America for the last 50 years, going back to, certainly I think of Eustace Mullins, and I think of Gary Allen, the senator, and Charles Lindbergh, you see.
Yeah.
To a certain degree. But a lot of these people didn't write books. Eustace Mullins did, but a lot of other people who spoke about secret societies and that there was some sort of Illuminati enclave operating in the world did not write it down, there weren't scholars in the say the way that we are today, where you have internet sites and books on it.
Yeah.
So the actual exposure of these things is extremely, a brief thing in time. And therefore, a lot of the scholars and researchers who've been looking into these symbols have discovered that the symbols of secret societies are primarily Egyptian.
Yeah.
And like David Icke has said, there's a certain Babylonian component thrown in there. But as a matter of fact, the Babylonian culture arose out of Egyptian culture. So it's basically all Egyptian anyway. So then they said, okay, it comes from Egypt. But my point is, in my work, is like, okay, well, Egypt was, as I said, 32 dynasties long, at least. That's only the official number. And was at least 25,000 years old. So it's impossible to say Egypt and have any specificity in what you're saying. Because if we take every age Henry, that came after the fall of Egypt, after the last of the dynasties of the Ptolemies in Egypt, the period, what I call the Alexandrian period.
Yeah.
If you take the Alexandrian period, and then you take the Grecian period, and the Roman period, and then the Renaissance period, you know, coming up even into the Dark Ages and the Enlightenment, and then moving into the industrial, sorry, the agricultural age, you know, the classical age, then,
yeah.
and then the agricultural, and then the industrial age, and up into our Silicon Age. If you take all of that timeline,
yeah.
multiply it three times over, like multiply all those ages by three, Egypt still lasted longer than all of that. So
amazing.
When scholars are saying, well, look, there's a pyramid on the dollar bill. Oh, my goodness, there's an obelisk on the banks of the Thames
yeah.
in London. Oh, my goodness, you know, there's symbolism. There's Egyptian symbolism in the Illuminati houses, or Charles Taze Russell is buried under an Illuminati pyramid. My goodness. And they go, it's Egyptian. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
it's Egyptian. Fantastic. Yeah,
yeah,
there are pyramids in Egypt. But that is so blurry and so unspecific and
yeah.
so completely vague. We need to do way better than that. And my work is to take it up forward to go, yes, it's Egyptian, all right. But it's of a very specific point of time in history. And in fact, it's even from a specific being,
yeah.
from a specific person in time. So when we're looking at that eye on top of the pyramid and the missing capstone, we're not just talking about some vague eye of the sun god, eye of Ra, eye of, you know, Jehovah, I mean, sorry, eye of Horus.
Horus, yeah.
Much too vague. This is the eye of Aton, and Aton was the god that was the skewed god of Akhenaton. It was a rendition of the old Amon-Ra cult.
Yeah.
But he basically was saying that the sun on the eastern horizon was what he was now worshipping, and he was worshipping the cult of light. The cult of light, which Jordan Maxwell has gone into many times. And the rising of the sun at the horizon is very, very important. Light from the sun is very important, and light metaphysically is very important.
Yeah.
Because the ancient Egyptians understood that they're not just worshipping external light, they're worshipping a phenomena that has both a physical property and a metaphysical property. And so it is the worship of light, and that's what Luciferianism originally referred to.
Yeah, sure.
Nothing negative or evil in the term Lucifer at all. The Lucifer meant what Christians know it means, son of the morning.
Yeah.
And that meant the sun in the sign of Leo, which opened the Egyptian year. In late Leo, more into what we would call Virgo now, was the opening of the Egyptian New Year. And when the sun rose on the horizon, they called it, here is Lucifer, the sun is born. Now, Christians misunderstand this. There's
yeah.
nothing negative about the term. In fact, Mary Magdalene has been referred to in the Gnostic scriptures as a Lucifer, meaning a light bearer.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ is a Lucifer because he is the son of the morning, born of a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
The rising sun at the horizon was called the bearer of the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it referred to Leo. Then later it got turned around, and the birthday of Jesus, the Christ, the Lucifer, was replaced with the birth of John the Baptist, which was in the winter solstice. It's a long story. I don't want to get into that. But it turned
but,
two birthdays around,
yeah,
and we got the birth of Jesus being in the middle of winter, when in fact it used to be in the height of summer, when the star yeah. Sirius was rising in the sky, when the Nile would rise, its waters would rise and flood, which is why Jesus is always associated with wine, and the overflowing chalice and the Holy Grail. All of these things represent the flowing waters of the River Nile.
Yeah.
Some of this symbolism comes from Egypt.
Yeah. And, you obviously are going to turn some heads when you say, when you associate both Jesus with Lucifer. And but you know...
homework.
Yeah, yeah, that's sure. You know, the only place that I know of in the Bible that is referred to Lucifer is in, I think it's in Isaiah 14, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know it's only mentioned once by name, I think, Lucifer. So I mean the connection I guess is made mostly outside of the Bible, at least, isn't that correct?
Right. Yes, it is. And when it's mentioned outside the Bible, it is never in a negative context. It simply meant the high initiate, the supreme priest of the sun,
yeah.
supreme mediator for light.
Yeah.
And this is a very important concept. So not only will I be turning heads by saying that, because actually a lot of other scholars have said that.
Yeah.
My real work to turn heads is to look, my goodness, can we now understand that the secret society symbols, I don't care what they are, I don't care if they're the Knights of Malta cross, or the double cross of Lorraine,
yeah.
or the cross and the crown, or the pyramid, you see, or the maces, or the dove, because the doves relate to the Davids, who were, the Davids were the Levitical followers of Akhenaton.
Yeah.
We can now date back directly to Akhenaton's period and his actions and his expulsion from Egypt many of the secret society symbols. And I've said it many times, And I'll say it again, that what this really means is this. If there was not a being called Akhenaten, and if he was not expelled from Egypt, then we would not have Judeo-Christianity, and we would not have any of the secret societies, at least not in the form that we have them now. So this person, this central character, where there's been a great smoke screen and a sort of like a Hollywood-esque cover-up of this individual to make him this incredible, you know, hero, heroic character,
yeah,
is done because it's very, very, very important to the world elite that they're not in any way threatened. If we just say, oh, well, it looks like they've got some bizarre Egyptian symbolism there, and we spend 50 years working it out, they're not threatened by that at all. No. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put the symbolism there in the first place.
Exactly.
If they think we were going to work it out. But the time has come where we are working it out, and through my years and years of research, and from reading all of the other conspiratorial books and the great experts in these fields, and looking at their work and saying, no, that's not quite correct. This individual is halfway to the truth, but this is, you know, they're leaving some major pieces out here.
Yeah.
So my work is constantly updated, as you say, especially on the website, because I'm constantly filling in the blanks that I see the errors in other people's research.
Yeah.
I don't just want to keep that to myself. I know that there's other people out there who can be spared that kind of research. So as the book is being prepared, the book is called The Irish Origins of Civilization.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that in the meantime, there's people have, you know, access to the key information so we can get on with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, before I, you know, start letting the book be released, because that is not my major concern to make money from my book. My major concern is to get the information out so people become aware, because we are in very dangerous times.
Yeah.
We're in the end times of something. You know, we're counting down to the 2012 end date, which we mentioned before.
Yeah.
And there's going to be severe changes along the way in the next couple of years. So people need to have the facts. They need to have the facts about what's going on internally, and they need to have the facts about the external world and the governments and the kind of control edifices that are there. And the reason why they need to know that is because I always maintain that this war, no matter how many other forms it takes, I don't care if it takes military action in Iraq, you see, or bombing from the sky, or vaccinations, or the Federal Reserve, yeah, or the pulling up of the ladder from the middle class, and the, you know, the loss of the jobs and the outsourcing, and all of these attacks upon human beings.
Yeah.
That is a, yes, those are identifiable things. But I never lose track of the fact that the real war is a war on consciousness. The ultimate goal of the secret societies and Big Brother and these Atonist forces that I'm talking about, these Luciferian forces,
yeah,
is to attack human consciousness, which is what they have done. The rest is just incidental. The rest just is symptoms of the main attack. And therefore, the counterattack must be also an awareness of the motives of these, of your rivals. It's not a physical attack in which you go and use, you know, weapons or what. What you do is you come into intellectual understanding of what, why would these people be doing this?
Yeah, yes.
My Atlantis book was to point this out. It's part of the journey to point this out. It was an attempt to look at their most ancient motives. So in any war, I want to make this absolutely fundamentally clear, because in the future, people are, if they're going to forget this, then when things get even hotter tomorrow, people are going to start reacting in very negative ways. So they need to be reminded, yeah, constantly. There's,
yeah,
a constant footnote on every page of this discovery towards this truth.
Yeah.
And that is that this is primarily an intellectual war in which it is through knowing about your rival why they do the things that they do. Do you remember in the old war days, the general used to compulsively have a picture of his opposite general on his table or on the wall? This is a well-known,
yeah,
military aphorism.
Sure.
That, yeah, that, you know, Montgomery would have the picture of Rommel and vice versa, and this has been done for all the way down the line. It's exactly that. This is understood by the top strategists in the world. We are losing the war, Henrik, against the forces of darkness on this planet because we are not doing this. We have mistaken. We're getting so caught up in the body bags, you know, and the,
yeah,
casualties, because they're in your face and they're gory and they're horrible and they're terrible, and countries losing their sovereignty and the World Bank and all of these other things,
yeah,
and we realize there's open attacks, and yet almost nothing can be done about it. It's because we have a gap, a lack of understanding about the nature of our adversary, what prompts them to do this kind of work,
yeah,
and so forth and so on. So the work with this dark side of the sun is to show you what these people believe. Why these secret societies use the symbol of the rising sun? Why are they using this Egyptian symbolism? What is their connection to Egypt?
Yeah.
And so forth. What is the new world order, really, from their point of view?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And to tie back to Akhenaten or Aton here, you said that he was expelled from Egypt.
No.
Do we know what happened there?
Yes, it's an incredible story. It's really an incredible story. The story involves the Levites, or the people that are now referring to the Jews. The word Jew is not used by people today who are true Jews. That's the first thing to understand. These are just religious Jews who follow the Torah by conversion. They're like you and I going to convert to Shintoism, for instance, or Baha'i religion.
Yeah.
So the modern Jews are just people who have converted to a religion in the past, or their forefathers did. And there's people today even converting to Judaism. That does not mean that they have a connection, bloodline-wise, or ethnic-wise, or racially, to the people that are referred to in the Bible as the Jews. And the rabbis know this. And it's a long story to, you know, long-winded story to go into explaining all the nuances of this.
Of course.
So just, you know, people can come onto my website and look that up and study the great, the question of the Jews and who are the Jews. It's a very interesting story.
It is.
And now, and in your own country, you have Yuri Lina, who's gone blue in the face speaking about all of this.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, the story is out of the bag there.
Yeah.
Concerning the modern Jews. But, so when we refer to the Jews of the ancient world, we've got to make sure that we understand there's no connection to modern religious Jews. The connection that has been an artificial one that has been funded and created artificially. It doesn't really exist. So who were these original Jews then? Who were these original Ibaru, the Hebrew, and the original Israelites? These, by the way, are Celtic terms, but let's leave that aside. That I'll be dealing with in the Irish Origins book.
Yeah.
Just now to specifically answer your question, the Ibaru, the Israelites, are a group of people who invaded Egypt in the 13th dynasty. And they were known as the Hyksos pharaohs.
Hmm.
So what this has been, what this has exposed is that there were Israelite pharaohs of Egypt. The very thing we're not told in the Bible. In the Bible, they want to tell us that Abraham and Joseph and Moses and these individuals were just wandering sort of vagabonds and ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
Just happened to end up one day on the steps of the steps of the Pharaoh's, you know, house.
Yeah.
And suddenly be promoted to positions of enormous authority.
Mm.
This is a complete and utter nonsense. You know, we have the cover-up story later on, this is because they wanted to downplay the role of Egypt in the lives of the Jews, is that the Jews themselves were pharaohs, and they invaded in about the 13th dynasty. And even though they were expelled at the beginning of the 18th dynasty, the ones who were expelled, Henrik, were more of the lower class rabble. Most of the elites of the Hyksos dynasty, who were pharaohs, who were courtiers, who were mayors and viziers and high priests of the temples, they were not expelled. These people were very much infused into the elite. It's like today. It's like you have the upper class.
Yeah.
It's like you have an invading group of people, which has happened many times. And then that group becomes, you know, an elite. The sons and daughters go on to become an elite within the movement. We even have that with Native American Indians now. We have that in different ethnic cultures where they start off as one thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on they get promoted to high places. And this is a normal function of life. The Irish coming to America and so on, suddenly becoming the mayors, you see, and the district attorneys and what have you. So this is what happened with the Hyksos, that even though they were despised deeply, they were deeply, deeply despised. They were considered almost alien and very evil.
Hmm.
However, because they existed for such a long period of time, and they occupied Heliopolis, Amarna, Giza, and the Delta regions, which is northern Egypt, where the Nile comes to the Mediterranean. They occupied all of those areas. And were also they were high priests of the sun at Heliopolis, which is the city of the sun, On. And I'm going into this because it's very important, because it ties into Akhenaten. Because Akhenaten was chosen to be pharaoh by these Hyksos worshippers of the sun that ruled the solar cult in Heliopolis. So it's not a question of the pharaoh appointing priests. It's the question of the priest appointing a certain pharaoh.
Oh,
this was not, this was not the case all the time in Egypt, but it was the case a lot of the time, where the priests were the real power. And they decided who was spiritual enough and who the god that they worshipped was appointing. So these, what has been kept from us is that the Israelites, the original Israelites that are portrayed in all of these glossy Hollywood movies and all of these books on the Bible and all of this nonsense that people have just bought into, these original people were not just some shepherd, you know, rag-wearing, skin-wearing, roaming shepherds being sort of guided through Canaan by Jehovah. No, no. This was a mighty pharaonic dynasty in Egypt called the Hyksos dynasty, who, even though a mass of them were expurged during the beginning of the 18th dynasty, the elites were well infused into Egyptian culture. They were not of Egyptian blood, and many of their wives married into the top pharaonic positions, okay? So the top pharaoh, the pharaohs and many of their top mayors and viziers and courtiers married in with Hyksos women, and vice versa. And this mixed blood question is also addressed in my book. It's very, very important that the fall of Egypt is understood as also a racial mixed, a mixture of the blood is very important here.
Yeah.
But leaving that aside for now, the idea was that these sun kings, these sun priests, who were worshipping the light, a very special kind of light, which I refer to as the dark side of light,
yeah.
Christians might refer to as Luciferianism, and they're not far wrong if they use that term. These individuals appointed Akhenaten, this insane, basically megalomaniac, utterly self-possessed, narcissistic, decrepit, and absolutely destructive, despotic individual.
Yeah.
I mean, this person was basically, in modern parlance, would have been a psychotic, or a what we would make call a religious fanatic, you know, a religious monomaniac.
Yeah.
No question about that. And did you know that he was raised in Goshen? Just the Goshen is the Hebrew word for the area of Avaris. Now, here's an incredible piece of information. The land of Goshen that the Israelites are always talking to, and modern Jews are referring to, and modern Christians understand that term, Goshen, was actually an area of land in which was the seat of power of these Hyksos people that I'm telling you about. The Israelite pharaohs lived in a city that in Egypt is called Avaris, A-V-A-R-I-S. But you know what the other name for that town was, or that city? Zion, Z-I-O-N.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Fascinating.
So there's just one dot connected.
Yeah.
So when you hear about modern Zionists, and when you hear about organizations, super steering committee, secret societies using that term, yeah. where you have people in France called the Priory de Zion,
yeah.
we understand why they might be using these terms. We might understand why all of the major Jewish thinkers have always said that Freemasonry is Judaic.
Yeah.
And Jews go, oh, wonderful. No. They're not talking about you guys. They're not talking about good, honest, Torah-worshipping, Torah-following, moral-living Jews of the world.
Yeah.
No. They're talking about the Jew-ez, the Egyptian Jews who followed Aton.
Hmm.
That's what they're saying when Freemasonry. I've got so many quotes on the First Astrotheology page from the top Jewish Zionist thinkers
yeah.
saying Freemason, lovingly saying, happily telling you, Yuri Lina, the great Swedish scholar in his book Architects of Deception,
yeah.
get that book. The man goes into the whole nine yards of it, exposing the fact that Judaism is not a religious edifice, it is a political connection.
Yeah.
There's reasons why the Freemasonry is called a Jewish, falsely a Jewish religion. It's because these people are knowing about the Egyptian connection, that these Egyptian symbols go back to a pharaonic dynasty, and it's them whose light is at the top of the pyramid. It's their god,
yeah.
Aton, and it's their new world order that's being created. So you can see now why this work is so important, because it goes further than most of the researchers who've just been, you know, sort of vaguely understanding what these symbols are all about.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important, you know, to get to the bottom of this.
Well, let me go on to finish with your question about why he got expelled.
Oh yeah, sure. Go ahead.
The thing is that these, I had to go into the background of showing who supported him, who brought him to power, and who brought his dynasty to power, was the Levitical. And they even did use that term. They called themselves the Levites.
Yeah.
The Zionists, the original Zionists. The Ibaru, who are, that's a misused name, they were really the Apuru. There's a difference. The Apuru meant the shepherds, the invaders, the foreigners. So these foreign invaders who lived and ruled in Egypt for 300 years, who backed Akhenaten up, and who basically had the say of who went and who did what. They lionized Akhenaten. He was their boy. He was their king.
Yeah.
And they conspired to close down all of the ancient temples of Egypt that had been there for countless thousands of years. The temples of Osiris, the temples to Ta, the temples to Maat, to Nuf, you see, to Isis, to Nephthys, to Osiris, to Amun-Ra.
Yeah.
And Amun-Ra was the most worshipped god after Aton. The supreme god of Egypt was Amun-Ra, and all the temples were dedicated to him.
Yeah.
And along comes Aton and his coterie, who are non-Egyptian. These people despise the true Egypt.
Yeah.
And they decided to, you know, impoverish the people, work them like slaves, and close down all of these temples. And of course, this was tolerated for several hundred years. Finally, the people of Egypt rose up, and it was the pharaoh Horemheb, who is technically considered the last pharaoh of the 18th dynasty and often is considered the first pharaoh of the 19th dynasty. He is the guy who seized the throne and basically ousted Akhenaten and threw him off the throne, and basically that began a series of expulsions in which finally Akhenaten and all of the priests that had followed him, you see, there was a big routing that took place.
Yeah.
A huge routing of these false Luciferian so-called monotheists. So isn't it laughable now when Christians are looking back and saying monotheism, the Jesus before Jesus, the sort of misguided Christ before Christ, how wonderful. If they only knew what their monotheism really was and what it was doing from day one,
yeah,
in this extremely egalitarian country that barely waged war on anybody, never expanded its territory, had more rights for women than any other culture ever known in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Not perfect, but certainly much more perfect than any other civilization we've ever had.
Yeah.
And the moment that the thing that we know as Atonism or monotheism arises, there's instantaneous chaos, bloodshed, and war. So if anyone needed proof of why Christianity and Judeo-Christianity is the way it is today and why we've suffered so much under these leviathans,
yeah,
need they look any further than to the origins of monotheism? And that is why the scholars have had a vested interest, Henrik, in smoke-screening this, in hijacking the term monotheism,
yeah,
and in really spray-painting this over so that it appears that the origins were just this sort of well-meaning but slightly misguided version of Christianity that came later. And how wonderful that should have happened. And anyone who buys into this, it's nonsense.
Mm.
How could God be such a dope that he created monotheism the first time around and then kind of blew it that he had to do it later on? I mean, the whole thing, even from a Christian standpoint, doesn't make any sense.
Of course, yeah. And to tie this together, what you have been talking about here with the modern world, except through Freemasonry, as you did, this is, of course, I saw the picture on the astrotheology page with Aton as the lion of tribe of Judah.
That's right.
And
when you're talking about House of David or House of Judah, these are the expelled Hyksos dynasties of Egypt. It's the Atonist cult, the entire Atonist cult of Akhenaton, the Levites, the Hyksos, were expelled. This is a very amazing event. And the Freemasonic societies have preserved the true religion. These are monotheists. These are people who are Atonists. Because when Akhenaton was expelled, he couldn't work openly anymore. So they devised the name Moses, which is what Sigmund Freud always said, that Akhenaton was Moses, and it turns out that is correct.
Uh-huh.
And later on, when the scripting of the Old Testament and the re-scripting of these stories, because what I'm talking about is Egyptian history here. It's Egyptian history.
Yeah.
But when it was re-scripted so that the Western world would read about it, it was changed into the form that we have as the Old Testament, where there's talk about Moses and all of these ludicrous, inconsistent stories about slavery in Egypt and expulsion,
yeah,
all of which have been shot down even by modern Jewish scholars. What I'm saying is absolutely in the works of the Jewish scholars about this. But you're right. The Lion of Judea, or the Lion of Judah, was Akhenaton. The Egyptians were the first ones shown as the Lion Kings,
yeah,
and as the Sun Kings. So if the Philip of Bourbon in France is later telling you that he's the Sun King, it's because he knows that that's a heritage passed on to him through the crown of Aton, these ancient cults.
Yeah. And this...
So the House of the Davids, or the Doves, because the commanders of the Atonist cult were called Davids in the Hyksos military regime, because the Hyksos was a military invading pharaonic dynasty, very warlike, unlike the rest of the Egyptians, who were the most spiritual people on earth. The Hyksos were very belligerent and warlike. It's sort of like they were the ones, like, remember in the story of Samson?
Yeah,
they always
sure.
show the Philistines as being these warlike and very despotic type of creatures.
Yeah.
And poor Samson, the Jew, has to fight them.
Yeah.
These are all whistleblowing stories, by the way. The real Philistines were the Hyksos. The Hyksos were of that nature, who, you know, stomped around in the streets and rode their military chariots and had everybody in line and everybody in fear.
Yeah.
We are being told a story, but we're being told it in a very, you know, obscure way.
Yeah.
It's being told in subliminal ways in some of these movies what the true story is. There's an incredible, even in King Lear, the story that I'm talking about the dispossessed king,
yeah,
you find that in many, many mythologies of the world, but you don't know what it is that you're reading. You find it in the Arthurian legends. You find it in the story of King Lear.
Mm.
And you find it in many of the biblical stories that never actually happened themselves, but they're retellings. They're extremely clever retellings of the story of Aton and Akhenaton, just spray-painted up differently to make it look like the story of Samson and the story of Daniel.
Mm.
But you see, they're really about one story that happened in Egypt.
Mm. Interesting.
And therefore, after the expulsion of this coterie, and they did go to Sinai, there's evidence why the mountain is also a very featured, the symbol of the mountain is seminal. But yeah, the Lion of Judea is the Sun Kings were inaugurated in Leo. because that's when the sun rose in the first year of the Egyptian New Year. So the Empire of Egypt, which lasted for many, many millennia, almost 25,000 years now, people are speculating, all the pharaohs were worshipped, considered born spiritually in the sign of Leo, and they were referred to as the lion kings.
Yeah.
They used to have a lion tail. If anybody even goes to a coffee book table in Egypt and open it, you will see that the apron, there's a, the, all the pharaohs wear a Masonic apron, and they often have a lion's tail hanging down at the back.
Oh.
Yeah. The priest used to wear the panther, you know, the with the cheetah skin.
Yeah.
But the symbol of the lion was always for the, reserved for the pharaoh. So when you see these beautiful lions in Trafalgar Square, and when you find out that the lion is the symbol of the Vatican and of Venice,
yeah,
and the patron saint, Saint Mark, Mars, is ruled by the lion, you see, and
yeah,
you see the, this all-pervasive state symbol. When you find that the tribe of Judah has adopted the lion, ask yourself, where did the tribe of Judah get the symbol of the lion? Out of the thousands and thousands of symbols that have to do with their God, what does the lion have to do with Jehovah? Okay, let me ask that question. And then why is it that the symbol for the tribe of Judah is the same symbol and color as the United Nations symbol?
Yeah.
It's just a slightly different design.
Exactly.
Well, the reason is this. They get the lion because the lion refers to their true masters, who are this Atomist cult who've been operating behind the world religions ever since. Now, here's the big clincher. As we said, Aton is always called Aton, A-T-O-N.
Yeah.
But the T becomes a D in Hebrew. So Aton is referred to by Jews to this day and by Christians as Adon, A-D-O-N, or Adonai.
Adonai, yes.
And the great Jewish scholars admit that this is a rendition of the Aton. So the Aton is the sun god, is the Adon. But who is Adon, really, to the Jews? Adon is the catchphrase or the nomenclature that they use for their true god, Yahweh, or Jehovah.
Yeah.
So my work is to point out this. This has been mentioned in a few other works, but I'm really emphasizing this once and for all so that the world understands something about the religions that they've been worshipping for 2,000 years, is that when you're saying the word Yahweh or Jehovah, a word that is actually taboo for Jews to even say by name, Jews will not refer ever from the pulpit, or a true Orthodox Jew will always say the word Adonai, be praised Adonai. But Adonai, whether the Jewish person realizes it or not, and in most cases it's not, is Atonai or Aton, the cult of Aton and Akhenaton. So we have the rise of Judeo-Christianity. The Christ is an Egyptian word, referring again to the Holy Anointed One of the Sun King, the Sun Temples.
Yeah, isn't this a connection with the Messiah, the crocodile fat?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. The Messiah is just a term that was picked up by Jews. A Messiah meant Anointed One. It meant the one who is to come, who's the next in line, the next king of the seed of David.
Ah.
But the seed of David is the David, or the doves.
Yeah.
Because the commanders, just like they use, you see the doves at the top of the maces of the Queen of England.
Yeah.
Just like you see the dove being used as Knights of Columbus, or the knight, because Columbus means dove.
Exactly.
Who are these columns? Who are these columns? Why is there secret society rituals involving the doves? It's because the doves are the Davids. That's why Queen Elizabeth says, I sit here on the throne of David.
Yeah.
Me and my clan sit here, holding the throne for Jesus and the seed of David. Why would she say that? What is the seed of David? Who are the Davids? And what's all this Egyptian symbolism that you find in all the royal dynasties of the world?
Yeah.
It's an incredible story here.
Yeah.
About these Atonists.
This connects to the British Israelites, and this is fascinating because, just as you say, the Windsors currently sitting on the throne, I mean, do they connect themselves with the tribe of Judah then, I guess? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They employ the six-pointed star. They employ the red thread. The beef eaters at the Tower of London, you can go and see it yourself, have the red thread, the red band around their waist.
Yeah.
Does not the queen walk on the red carpet? Does she not say at the time of her coronation, we are here under the seed of David?
Yeah.
The Judaic symbolism, well, of course, we're now understanding it's not Judaic in the sense of religious, under people would understand it. So, you know, Jews can stop dribbling at the mouth and thinking that the queen is so holy because she's mentioning what appears to be Judaic terms. No, no. These are free Masonic terms. They have nothing to do with the Torah at all.
Yeah.
The Torah is a book, just like the Bible, that tells people to live a moral life. Well, then how come Jews are slaughtering Palestinians all over the world and serving the dark forces of the Illuminati? Is that living a moral life? is because they've been sold a bill of goods. The Jews do not realize that these same Atomist forces run from London and New York funded the Holocaust that murdered so many of their own religious Jews.
Yeah.
But many Jews have woken up to this now, fortunately,
yeah.
through the David Coles and Arthur Koestlers and Benjamin Freemans and others. They're now starting to realize, my God, we have also been placed on the altar of sacrifice
yeah.
by people who are calling themselves Zionists, but who have nothing to do with us. And who are these people that are first putting us on the altar of sacrifice, and as well as the Gentiles and the Arabs,
yeah.
getting us to fight like maniacs over something that has nothing to do with us, that's not mentioned in the Torah at all?
Mm.
Who are the Knights of the Temple of Zion when the Crusaders went over to the temple so-called of Solomon?
Yeah.
Solomon has nothing to do with any Jews. Solomon are the three names of the sun in the ancient world, meaning,
yeah.
again, it's the old Egyptian cults of the sun is where the Templars went
yeah.
to be initiated by them and to be brought under their service.
Hmm.
Because when these Knights Templars happened to be fighting the Crusades, I believe that they fell in with the cult of Aton. The cult of Aton, who has been having many power dynasties surreptitiously, I'm talking about, under the cover, not openly in history anymore.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't work openly after they left Egypt. But they were an extreme money power in the Far East,
hmm.
as well as in the West. And therefore, I believe that the Templars met with these people. They were co-opted, and they were shown secrets. So when they say, we were shown secrets under the Temple of Solomon, the Knights Templar writings say, we found gold and great treasures under the Temple of Solomon. Of course, all the mugs, all the Indiana Jones run out there with their spades, trying to find it's so preposterous, Henrik, it makes me almost want to pull my hair out. It's like, you're now running out with spades, digging under the Temple of Solomon for a few coins. You
yeah.
think that that's the secret that they were telling you about?
Yeah.
You're looking for the Ark of the Covenant. You think, you really imagine that there's a real physical thing? I mean, can we grow up a bit
yeah.
and realize that the temple that the treasure that they're talking about, is not some pirate's treasure. It's
yeah.
a secret.
Yeah.
Keeper of the royal secret. What royal secret that the 32nd and 33rd degree Freemasons are aware of? I'll tell you the secret. I've exposed it.
Please do.
That these people are worshipping the Christed One, the Saul kings from old.
Yeah.
And that's why they're on their knees. And that's why all kings... You know, the motto of all world Freemasonry, and you can see this motto not only in Freemasonic lodges, but you can see it on many courts,
yeah.
is Per me regnus regnant in Latin. And it means, through me all kings will reign. Why has nobody in the research community and the conspiratorial movement asked the question, who's that me?
Yeah.
When you see the New World Order banner at the bottom of the dollar bill, why doesn't people ask, who's New World Order?
Yeah.
It's the New World Order of this Levitical, Hyksos, Cult of Aton individuals, the true Yahwists,
yeah.
after losing Egypt, Henrik, they decided that nothing less would suffice their monomania and their egotism than to have the whole world now become theirs.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about when I say get into the mind of your rival.
Yeah, exactly.
Come then, think in your mind.
Hmm.
Sit down and think, my God, how you would feel if you and your coterie were given the big finger. Out you go, and never come back here.
Yeah.
And I'll ride my chariots over you, which is in fact what they had to do. Akhenaten eventually was killed, literally by Seti I. His chariots had to go and run over the guy because they were always trying to come back and infiltrate Egypt again.
Mm.
But you can imagine what the commanders and these great Atonist cult,
yeah.
why did Moses put up his brazen serpent in the desert? I'll tell you why, because it's pharaonic. He was a pharaoh. Moses
yeah.
was the pharaoh.
Yeah. Of course.
Their hatred of Egypt is why we don't read any of what we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes in the Bible. It's because after leaving, because a lot of people will say, well, wait a minute, how come this stuff is not in the Bible if it's real history?
Yeah.
It's because after the expulsion, these people became the greatest haters of Egypt and everything that was Egyptian.
Mm.
It's just like you being thrown out of a college. Won't you be sitting at the bar telling all your friends how horrible it was?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, it's the evilest thing in the world. When you were involved in it, when you were the secretary or the executive, it was the most wonderful thing in the world.
Yeah.
Then all your neighbors had to hear about it. Once you get booted out because you embezzled, then, of course, they were corrupt.
Yeah.
They're evil. They didn't understand you.
Of course.
Simple human psychology.
Yeah.
Well, imagine, magnify that many times so that you've lost the thrones of the greatest empire in the world.
Yeah.
The only thing that will now appease that inner shame is to set your designs on having the rest of the world that doesn't even have real true kings, and it's easy to overtake if you set your mind on it, really.
Yeah.
And that is what has happened. So the new world order is to replace the old world order, and that's why it's below an Egyptian pyramid. It's
yeah.
to tell you what order, what god, what king, and why there's a wasteland around the pyramid. Around the pyramid on the dollar bill, you see just sort of like a wasted land. And that's the idea, that these were King Lear's being thrown out of their land, betrayed, you see. So they always felt that Egypt had betrayed them. They never looked at themselves as the criminal party. The criminal party now was Egypt.
Yeah.
And so later, when the Judaic scholars were writing this history, Egypt would be played down. The Pharaoh of the time of the Exodus would never be mentioned.
Yeah,
My goodness, if that's not a glowing omission, that should have put people on alert long ago as to what's going on.
Yeah, just listen to the terminology that, what is it called, Hiwas, the Egyptian, he who leads the archaeological digs down there. They even call themselves, he has a website, they call it theguardians.net. I mean, what kind of name is that?
Isn't it incredible?
Yeah, Guardians, of course.
Guardians.net, yes.
Yeah.
Guardians.net. Guardians of what?
Exactly.
And see, if we look at the solar symbolism and the subversive use of sacred symbolism in the media, I emphasize on that DVD about the sun. Not only are the secret societies using it, but Madison Avenue, the media.
Yeah.
We're having light thrown at us.
Yeah.
And this brings us to a very important point, is what has this ancient history got to do with modern times? We've said that it has to do with secret societies. And we talk about that it's the reason for the rise of Judeo-Christianity, because these individuals have penned Judeo-Christianity. They have created it and funded it as a smokescreen behind which that they can operate. So people who study religion will not come across the secrets that I'm talking about. Those who study secret societies may have a chance.
Yeah,
I studied both, and that's why, and I've also had great mentors like Eustace Mullins and Jordan Maxwell and others. So, of course, one moves forward and understands, and people like Yuri Lina in your own country.
Yeah.
So there's tremendous discoveries. Now we need to go further and see, okay, but that still leaves the question of what on earth does this really have to do with today?
Yeah.
And this is a metaphysical question that has to do with light and the philosophy of light. And why do I refer to Athenism as Luciferianism or as the cult of the dark side of the light? And that has to do with the properties of light and how light can be used as a weapon against the human race, never forgetting that this ultimate war is a war against consciousness. Because the Egyptian groups that we're talking about, they themselves have ancestry coming out of the dragon courts of ancient Atlantis. So even though we've been taking things back to Egypt, let us never forget that Egypt is a modern creation.
Yeah.
In the timeline of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
They are merely descendants themselves, as were the Celts, of the dragon blood. That's what they refer to it as, a dragon bloodline, which is why you have dragons in London. The symbol of the dragon is everywhere, on the coat of arms of so many countries and on the flags of Scotland and Ireland, Wales. And you see the dragon. It's the dragon bloodline that William Bramley refers to as the brotherhood of the snake.
Yeah.
And this is why the snake was so important in Egypt. Because the temple, did you know that the temple of Amarna and the temple of Luxor were the first temples shaped in a cross?
No, I didn't.
That's where the cross comes from. That's why the cross is connected to religion. So when Christians are now looking at the secret society symbols of the cross and the crown, and they have this crazy idea that, oh, these wonderful secret societies, at least they're using the cross, and at least Constantine saw a vision of the cross in the heavens, and look, there's the Knights of Malta using what looks like a cross, so I guess they're okay then.
Yeah.
Or the Vatican uses the cross everywhere on top of their temples, so I guess they must be Christian then. Well, I'm sorry to have to destroy your little illusion, but no, they're not. And the reason why they use the symbol of the cross in connection with the dove and the globe and the world and all these other symbols
has
nothing to do with them being Christian. It's got to do with the fact that these are remnants of the temple of Luxor and the temple of Amarna, which were the first temples designed by the Athenists to look like a cross for some reason, because of the cross of the zodiac, perhaps.
Even the queens, it's, as you say, with the, what is it called, the Globus Crucier or something?
Yes.
It's, I hold the world in my hands and I own it, basically, so.
That's right, Anima Mundi. It's the Anima Mundi, I am a queen of the world, and upon that is a cross.
Yeah.
And she is the whore of Babylon. But the Babylon is not Babylon in Persia. Babylon originally was in Egypt. Did you know that? The original Babylon was in Cairo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Tower of Babylon never was where it was now. That's just a play on words. The Persians had a great love for Egypt. And even though they were invaders of Egypt in the early times, most of Persian culture adored the Egyptian pharaohs.
Yeah.
Babylon was originally, the original Babylon was outside Cairo, I believe. It was a huge city, and it also had a tower. And the later Babylonians, their Babylonian was Babylon II, basically. It was a reconstruction of the Tower of Babylon in order to honor the Egyptians, because there was a lot of commerce when times were really, really good, mercantile-wise, between Persia, Iran, and and Egypt, there was a period in which the city of Babylon in Egypt was mimicked by the Persians out of homage.
Hmm.
And then later, when the Egyptian Babylon was destroyed, people are now thinking Babylon is in Persia, and the Bible, you know, backs that up, and it's not true. It's absolutely not true.
Hmm. Well, of course, any civilization who thrives and prospers, you know, they build further out and make more cities. So of course, it's not
exactly
that strange.
It doesn't stop there. I mean, we've got all sorts of Egyptian symbolism in Washington D.C. and
yeah.
Cologne and Paris. I recommend people to get Graham Hancock's book Talisman.
Yeah.
To get David Overson's The Secret Architecture of a Nation's Capital. To show just how extensive this cult is. But the thing to remember when you're reading those books is that those authors cannot tell you who the originator of all of this is. They are unable to tell us who and what is behind all of this. They see something happening, and that's brilliant. As I'm saying, in the last 50 years, we're moving ahead in that respect, that we understand that something bizarre of a secret society nature is happening.
Yeah.
That there are that Napoleon and the kings of France and the king of England and the presidents of America are using Egyptian symbolism, and we kind of have this vague idea that they may be Masonic, and I think these guys are into Egypt for some reason. We really don't know why. Well, now has come the time is to find out why.
Yeah.
Who these people really follow, and who the Illuminati really are, who the Luciferian really is.
Exactly.
So that when a Christian, if he wants to use that term, go ahead, use it. But then at least know where to apply it, and know how to apply it, because it might implicate you. When a Christian uses the term Luciferian, they may be actually implicating themselves, because their own Christ was a Luciferian. The light that they say that they worship is a philosophy that didn't originate with Christianity, I'm afraid.
Yeah, of course.
So when a Christian goes, I worship light. Jesus is light. God is light.
Yeah.
I go, ah, so you're into Egyptology now then. They go, no. I just said that God was light. Well, exactly. That's an Egyptian concept, by the way. In fact, it's not even an Egyptian concept. It's a concept brought into Egypt from a lot of these invading dynasties. It's very, 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 very pagan.
Yeah.
You know any of this?
Yeah.
You have any idea about it? They look at you like you're a Satanist, that you're crazy.
Of course. We have about just 3 minutes of the regular program here, but quickly here, is there a connection between Aton and Ireland?
Yes, the connection is interesting because all of Egyptian culture is based on the original, pure, unadulterated Egyptian theocracy is based on Celtic Druidism. This is why my book is actually called The Irish Origins of Civilization.
Yeah.
And the Atonist cult that later migrated out from Egypt in the times that we've been speaking about reinvaded the West and then tried to lie to say that they're the ones bringing back this Judaic Egyptian royal solar symbolism back into the countries of the West, including Ireland. It's
yeah.
like what we talked about in the previous show about the lie of the East-West movement of civilization.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the deep connection between Egypt and Ireland I try to explore to show that the original unadulterated Egyptian theocracy, which was a stellar astrological theocracy, was Irish in nature.
Mm.
But that it got subverted and destroyed because the Atonists we're talking about coming full circle later on, it's like a full circle type of thing, come back to murder their own parents. Because the connection is that we know that Nefertiti's daughter is buried in Ireland. The Christians talk about their prophet Jeremiah being buried in Ireland. That's a fact.
Yeah.
We know that King Menes of the first dynasty of Egypt is buried in Northern Ireland. And the list goes on of the Egyptian connections, you see.
Yeah.
We need to explore this. What is the real stone of Bethel? And, you know, the Jacob's Ladder and Jeremiah. There's lots of
exactly.
British Israelite lies.
Yeah.
Because the British Israelites are another Freemasonic order that sits in front of the Atonists, who are like their spin doctors, to break up the religions and to lie and to disseminate into the religions of the world the lies so that we don't track back to the true Atonists. The Atonists have many spin doctors and propaganda agencies that make sure that the real history of the world is contorted so that we do not, you know, understand the truth.
Yeah.
My work is to break through all of their lies of the British Israelites and the Zionist movement and the Freemasons so that we can see the true picture of the past in an unadulterated form. And it's a most interesting story. It really is.
It is.
And thank you for giving me the time to, you know, to go into it a little bit.
Absolutely, of course. And we have to continue this, I guess, because there's so much more to talk about. And
definitely.
I just want to say to everyone listening that go to taroscopes.com, Michael's website, and I highly endorse, you know, to get the DVD series Origins and Oracles, and go there now by simply typing in originsandoracles.com, one word, and get it, because it's important and it's fascinating stuff. So I guess we'll end the interview.
We've been selling out every day. We've had orders from all over the world. The thing is far exceeded my expectations of how successful it was going to be, because people have anticipated this for 2 years. It's been, I've had so many emails from the last 2 years going, when is it going to be ready?
Yeah.
You know, from all over the world. And now I got it ready, and we're having tremendous success with it. It is a work that time has come, really.
Wonderful, wonderful.
They have their own website, as you say.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Michael, for coming on the
okay,
show.
Okay, Henrik, we'll talk soon then.
Where do we come from?
Michael Tsarion and I will be doing a 6-part program series together here on Red Ice Radio. During this 6-part series, we'll also be having a contest, and you'll have the opportunity to win one DVD per program from Michael Tsarion's acclaimed DVD series, Origins and Oracles. Don't forget, our first live program is July 6th at 1 p.m. Pacific on bbsradio.com.